2022. I am your host of the show, Torn Into, the political show and news information and more. My co-host today, Pastor Melvin Burns, is taking care of funeral stuff. Brother, be blessed. A few things that I want to say before we get the show going today. Of course, we are interviewing it's the political season, so we're interviewing candidates. If you would like to ask someone a question, please, you can go to our Facebook site, WVS 103.7 The Beat, or M106 to ask them a question. If you're driving right now and you don't get a chance to see the show, what you can do is that these shows repeat themselves. Okay. So just go to WVS 103.7 The Beat or M106 and you can catch this interview. Okay. A couple things that I want to do before I get on our first guest. I just have to talk about a couple things. Of course, if you don't know, if you've been on the rock, President Biden has COVID. So we wish him a speedy recovery, which tells you people this is out there. Okay. So be careful. I'm recovering, still recovering from my second bout with it. Number two, I have to talk about January 6th, what's going on with the hearings real quick. And I just have one question. Can everybody be a liar? Is everybody a liar? From the response that we're getting from one side, and you know me, you've grown to trust me that I'm not, I'm here for the truth. Democrat, Republican, Independent, Unitarian, whatever. But can everybody be a liar? That's my question. Anyway, my first guest today is Will Snyder, and we're going to get him and get right to him. Next, we're going to be going to Brennan Gorman, and after that, we have Chuck Richard that will be on the show. And so we're going to be giving each guy roughly 15, 20 minutes, commercial break, and try to get everybody on. If you have not been interviewed on this show and still would like to, call Lady J at 231-727-5007. That's 231-727-5007. She has made 1,000 phone calls, and I don't think she should have to make but one, because you, if you're running for office, need to talk to us about what your agenda is. Speaking with that, put your hands together for our first guest, Mr. Will Snyder. How are you doing, sir?
Not too bad. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here today. And I tell you, you only had to make one phone call and I returned it. And I'm so glad to be here.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it. We said that we weren't going to just try to chase people down. Don't feel that we need to do that. So anyway, Mr. Snyder, you're running for what seat?
I'm running for the new 87th State House District seat, which is very similar to the former 92nd seat, okay, which you're quite familiar with.
I'm quite familiar with it.
So the district now includes, after redistricting, the cities of Muskegon, Muskegon Heights, North Muskegon, Roosevelt Park, one small precinct of Norton Shores off of Getty, and the townships of Laketon, Muskegon, and most of Dalton Township, minus the village of Lakewood Club.
A very diverse
very diverse.
So what made you to get it? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. I'm born and raised in Muskegon my whole life. Grew up in Glenside and early on, and my parents got divorced, and my dad still lives over in the Marshfield neighborhood on Wood Street, So I'm quite familiar with all areas of the city. You know, we were two houses from the railroad tracks, as we used to say. We were downtown, but we were two houses from the tracks.
Been there.
So I'm very familiar with a lot of the local neighborhoods in this district. Unfortunately, my mother passed away when I was in high school, which kind of changed my career path and my the way things were going. Mm-hmm. So while all my friends went off to college, I went to work full time and went to community college and became very, very involved in my local union, USCW. Okay. I became a union steward and eventually an assistant union rep covering other stores. So I worked at Meijer, but I covered, several Meijer stores, Rite Aid stores, representing my fellow workers, which is kind of how I got involved in politics. And it's been a journey the last 10, 12 years. You know, I've worked for our current state representative, Terry Sabo, for the last mm-hmm. 6 years. And it's been a true honor and a privilege. And I think I've had a great mentor in that office. And we've been able to do some special stuff, and I'm glad to be a part of it. I think that experience of working in that office, having relationships with local elected officials, municipal leaders in the district and in Lansing is what sets me apart from my opponents, who mm-hmm. are all really good people. I want to be clear about that. I'm a fan of all of my opponents. They're nice people. We've all been able to stay above the fray, above the negativity for the most part, which has been refreshing in the year 2022.
Mm-hmm. So you've been a resident. Did you graduate from Muskegon High School?
I went to Mona Shores.
My condolences on that. Just kidding on that.
That's okay.
But I have a blue and white on today, so yeah, that makes up for that.
Well, you know, I went to Mona Shores, but my dad went to Muskegon, and I grew up, going to Big Red events my whole career, because that's where my dad went. And Friday nights at Hackley Stadium are, it's family tradition for my family. So.
Okay. Okay, so now you told us a little bit about yourself. You told us you're working with Sabo. You're dealing with a very diverse area. I talked to Sabo, Representative Sabo, about the dog that barks the loudest gets the meat. In other words, the city of Muskegon gets a lot of stuff. Muskegon Heights doesn't necessarily get the stuff. How are you going to be a representative for all the people? Because it's so diverse and diverse needs.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge thing that you bring up. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to run, because I think it's so important that greater Muskegon, everybody in Muskegon, has somebody at the table to represent them in Lansing. Mm-hmm. Making sure we have a voice to get our piece of the pie so that everything doesn't go to the east side of the state.
Right.
We need to make sure that we have somebody with the experience who's been in that room before and can make sure that we're advocating. You know, and one of the things that I'm most proud of, my last day working for Terry was April 1st when I became a full-time candidate. Because I had to leave office, I couldn't run and continue to be a state employee. But up until that time, we had brought back to this area, including Muskegon Heights, over $42 million in state funding, state projects for the last 6 years. And that was while we were in the minority for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that when push comes to shove, sometimes we can put some of our ideological differences aside to make sure we deliver for our hometowns. Yeah. And it's something that I have a track record of doing. One of the things that made me jump in this race, there was a couple other people that were going to run and they backed out. Somebody mm-hmm. who I really thought I was going to support. And when she backed out, the field kind of opened up. And then my friend Charles Nash decided to stay at the county commission level, and he backed out. Mm-hmm. And I had people in the community coming to me and asking me about this. They're saying, you know, you've been here, you've done this. What do you think? Would you consider it? And so I sat down with my, you know, close friends and family, and I came to the decision that I don't want to regret not doing this now, because this opportunity is here. And I think that Muskegon Heights, Greater Muskegon, has to have that voice that's going to be there, that's going to show up. And that's what I've done my whole life, is show up in the community, mm-hmm. And local Democratic. You know, I've been a long time involved in the Democratic Party, former vice chair, involved at the state Democratic Party. I've been elected for, I think, 8 years now on the state central committee. And in our community, which I think is probably my biggest asset, is I'm really involved in our community, in the neighborhood. You know, I serve on the Reed Muskegon Board of Directors. I previously served on the, very involved in the Labor Council, Relay mm-hmm. for Life of Muskegon. I'm not somebody who, you know, came into the community recently. I've been here. I've got roots here. You know, Muskegon roots, Lansing experience is our campaign slogan, and it's mm-hmm. less of a slogan and been more of a way of life, and it's something I'm pretty proud of.
Okay, coming into what you're saying, if you are elected, there are several questions that I want to ask you. First of all, because some people are so dug in, right and left, mm-hmm. would you be able to work on the other side of the aisle?
Yeah, I think I would. Unfortunately, you know, Lansing has become more divisive than it has been. We've said in the past that it was Washington, D.C. that was that way, but in the last 4 years, we've definitely seen it in Lansing as well.
That's not an understatement.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. But I do have relationships with people across the aisle, even right, you know, Greg Van Workum, who's the current state rep from the 91st district. I think I've got a pretty good relationship with him, and he might, you know, he's in a election right now, a pretty heated primary himself, but there's plenty of Republicans who I've worked with on things across the state. And it's something that we could continue to do. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to work every day, but well, the election day is August 2nd. We might take 2 days off after the primary. But then after that, every day between then and November, we're going to work our butts off so that we try and take control of the state house, mm-hmm. flip the state house, and flip the state senate. And, you know, Representative Sabo running for that state senate seat, that's going to be one of the most targeted legislative seats in the state.
Right.
And it'll be a chance to flip it right here in Muskegon, and we're going to take center stage.
Now, knocking at doors, what are some of the things that you're hearing?
Yeah, coming into this week, myself personally, I'd knocked on over, I think, 4,000 doors. That's not volunteers. That's will doors. And a couple of things you're hearing right now, roads. I mean, local roads. Everybody wants to talk about fix the damn roads, as the governor would say. But those are highways, state trunk lines, busy roads. Those are not our local roads that you and I drive on each and every day. Mm-hmm. And I think we're starting to see some of the investment over the last 10 years into our highways pay off. If you travel anywhere right now across the state, there's barrels and cones and construction everywhere. And I think we're starting to see some of that pay off. But we have a once in a generational opportunity right now. We're still sitting on a surplus of over $8 billion at the state to invest in local roads and infrastructure. I mean, earlier this year, and I know it happens to many of us, you know, I was driving down Peck Street, dodged one pothole, hit another, ended up with, you know, quite a bit of car damage on the front end, like $500 right. later. That's not something that people should have to deal with on a daily basis.
Exactly.
We need to find ways to invest in our local communities, local municipalities, through grant funding and other things, to ensure that we can fix local roads and infrastructure, the roads that we all drive on each and every day. So that's one thing. The casino is probably one of the top other things that comes up at the door. Mm-hmm. People are very disappointed at the governor and her decision. Strong Democrats are very disappointed at the governor and her decision, as am I. I think I'm one of the only candidate that was on record prior as really being supportive of that. And I'm very disappointed in the governor's decision, but that doesn't mean, because that's a lot of jobs. I mean, that's 3,000 jobs for Muskegon, and they're good paying jobs.
Right.
I hope that we've not come to the end of the road. I hope that there's a way to still get this done, but I'm also disappointed, you know.
I kind of saw that coming because of the east side of the state.
Yeah,
and I agree. Everybody else complaining, all the tribes complaining. I saw that one coming.
I'm disappointed in the way that it went down, how we deferred and made it so close to the election. If you're going to say no, why not just say no out of the gate?
Yeah, that would have been the thing to do instead of punt.
Right.
I think if she's elected, I think you might see a different result. Tell people in the next couple minutes, what are your top five things that you want to accomplish?
Okay. Yeah, so I think we talked about the local roads, local infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Second thing, investment in workforce and talent development, so that we can create, how do you create good paying jobs and bring good paying jobs to Muskegon and Michigan? You have to ensure that we have a highly talented and skilled workforce. Mm-hmm. So invest, and that doesn't mean college isn't for everybody. I didn't graduate from college. So we have to invest in skilled trades programs and other workforce programs where employers can send their employees off to better themselves, to better their education, to be able to make more money and make a living wage. And by in mm-hmm. doing so, we create a more skilled workforce and create those jobs here. Okay. Right now, obviously, and this is the other thing that comes back at the door all the time, is the inflation and the high cost of basic necessities for, you know, working people. And the governor has proposed kind of an inflation buster tax credit right now that the legislature has refused to act on for working folks, that would put $500 in everybody's pocket right now to help pay for gas and groceries. And let me tell you, I think $500 would, while it's not very much, it'd go a long way for a lot of people.
Well, considering that most households are $400 away from a disaster, $500 exactly. would help.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of repealing the pension tax, the senior pension tax that was instituted by Governor Snyder in the Republican legislature in 2011. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about women's reproductive rights right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm endorsed by Planned Parenthood, and I think that ensuring that women's health care is accessible and safe should be at the forefront of our state right now.
Okay.
So that's kind of my top priorities. I would just reiterate that I'm the only candidate in this race endorsed by organized labor, which in a Democratic primary, I think is saying something. Mm-hmm. And it's a near unanimous endorsement from labor organizations all across the state, from teachers to nurses to skilled trades to factory workers, grocery store workers. It's something I'm very proud of. And I've got most of our local Democratic elected officials in the area supporting me, our Sheriff Mike Poulin, our prosecutor DJ Hilson, retired Sheriff Bob Carter, who's a great personal friend of mine that's kept me in this political game.
Yeah, good friend of mine too.
For a long time, Commissioner and former Mayor Rilestein Wilkins, who we should also shout out, will be turning 90 this weekend.
It'll yeah, good friend of mine birthday. Too. Yeah, happy birthday, Rilestein, Mayor.
Brianna Scott, Bonnie McLaughlin, Andre Williams. These are just people and relationships that I have built over the years, and it means so much to me that they support this campaign because they know that it's important that we have an experienced voice that can get off the ground and running on day one to make sure greater Muskegon has a seat at the table.
Okay, well, we're going to have to go to the next candidate. But if somebody wants to find out more about you, how do they find out that information?
Yeah, you can go to electwillsnyder.com. You can find us on Facebook at electwillsnyder. I'm on Twitter, at SkiTownSnyder. And my phone number is listed on my cell phone number is listed on every piece of literature that our campaign sends out. We sent out 7 mailings, knocked on probably close to 10,000 doors, and my phone number is on each and every one of those pieces of literature. I think it's vitally important to have somebody who is accessible to the community and listens, and that's why I put that phone number on there.
I got to get this question. I'm just going to summarize this question. This came in from Linda Moore. Basically, how are you going to advocate for Muskegon Heights to get more money for infrastructure to enhance the city of Muskegon Heights?
Yeah, so going back to when we talked about the infrastructure stuff earlier, I think we need to have a grant program where local municipalities like Muskegon Heights will be able to apply for money to come in and fix some of our local infrastructure. And it would be a statewide program. That's the only way you're going to get it to pass, just to include everybody. But I'll be there advocating for Muskegon Heights every step of the way because it's a huge deal. I mean, it's a huge, huge deal.
Will Snyder, thank you so much. Have a good Friday and good luck in your campaigning.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. And everybody have a great, safe weekend.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
That was Will Snyder. We're not going to take a commercial break. We're going to go right into our next candidate, Brennan Gorman. Put your hands together for Mr. Brennan Gorman. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
You and I, like Will Snyder, worked at Myers. I worked at Myers. You and I have a ton of stuff in common with the JCs. And I was reading that. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, our condolences about, you're just getting out of a funeral.
I am, yeah. I was raised with a great family. I was raised with the slogan, family above all else. If you have nothing else in this world, you have your family. So when my uncle passed, I packed up and we drove out to Minnesota. And so even though it's crunch time, you know, for me, being here with my family is absolutely what I need, where I need to be right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell us, you talked about family, but tell us something about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Brennan Gorman. I'm a practicing attorney in the city of Muskegon. I'm also an adjunct faculty member at Muskegon Community College. I moved to Muskegon about 6 years ago, just over mm-hmm. 6 years ago. And from the east side of the state, and on the east side of the state where I grew up, you know, it never really felt like a community until I really got into Muskegon. And, you know, when I moved here, I knew one person, and that person introduced me to Run Muskegon. From Run Muskegon, it became the JC's Total Trek Quest. It became the Parties in the Park Board. It became the foundation for Muskegon Community College. In such a short amount of time, this community has welcomed me, has allowed me to contribute in a multitude of ways. And, you know, with my education, with my experience, what I hope to accomplish in Lansing, I'm really hoping that this position running for the state house in the new 87th district is how I'm able to best serve my community moving forward, my adoptive community.
Okay. What we try to do is try to ask the same questions to each candidate. And we had a question from Linda Moore. I'm going to summarize it. It's how are you going to be an advocate for the city of Muskegon Heights?
Well, so first and foremost, I guess there's a number of ways, because there's not just one solution. It's not just if we put money toward the roads will all of a sudden be better, because if we don't fix the underlying reasons why the roads are in the condition they are, So it's fixing the roads, and then it's making sure that there's adequate education. It's making sure that Muskegon Heights Public Charter Academy moves back into the Muskegon Heights public school system. Mm-hmm. When that district started with $12 million in debt and over the last several years is now ballooned to $50 million, there has to reach a breaking point. How do we make sure that we bring back a public school system to Muskegon Heights? From there, how do we make sure that the residents are receiving a higher level of education? And I think that's through 2 years free for an associate's degree, as well as free funding for any individuals that want to go into a trade, to make sure that if anybody is interested in whatever career path they have, that the state of Michigan is able to make sure that they can start moving there. Because then once we have residents with an education and better paying jobs, they can afford better homes or can afford to fix up their homes. And long term, mm-hmm. better housing values supported by individuals with an educated and better jobs will provide more tax funding, so that long term, the city of Muskegon Heights can afford to fix its local roads, because that's really what it comes down to, both in many areas in the city of Muskegon as well as the city of Muskegon Heights, is that these are the local roads whose responsibility is the respective municipalities. And so that while state funding can help come down and help to some degree, most of the maintenance and upkeep, particularly with the water lines even below the roads, falls often on the local municipalities. And so, you know, I see it as a holistic approach. It's not just one thing that I want to do in that regard. It's addressing so many different facets so that there's this long-term, really slow growth. And I know slow growth isn't particularly attractive, but to find sustainable long-term growth, we need to be addressing multiple fronts.
I asked the question, and this goes with the question that you just received. And thank you, Linda Moore Vines, for that question. I talked to Terry, Representative Terry Sabo, on the show about, is it the biggest dog that gets the meat? For instance, the city of Muskegon is a big advocate, and they've got a lot of money from the state, where other municipalities feel that they've been left behind. How would you be an advocate for all who you represent?
Absolutely. And with the city of Muskegon, it sometimes comes down to population. It is the largest city within even just the Muskegon County area. But when it comes to individual representation for municipalities, it's making sure that what residents are asking for. And, you know, I hope you don't mind, I'm going to preempt kind of a door knocking question. But while many residents share similar concerns, the residents who are demanding the most change, the most advocacy, is in the city of Muskegon, in the city of Muskegon Heights. Many of the residents that I've talked to in Roosevelt Park or North Muskegon, while they share many of the same social concerns, it really comes down to making sure that the roads are continued to be maintained, making sure that their parks are there, that beautification still exists. Mm-hmm. And while I'm simplifying, I think a lot of the concerns, what it comes down to, as you said, the loudest dog gets the, I think loudest dog gets the bone.
You get the biggest meat on the bone.
Sure. And I think it comes down to, you know, the other one would be, I guess, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And
yeah,
I want to make sure that, because those are such superficial changes, that the foundational level changes that need to happen for so many residents in the city of Muskegon and Muskegon Heights, that they're being met, that because they are the ones demanding the most change, that they get the attention to make sure mm-hmm. that the needs that they're facing, these intrinsic level needs, are met.
Would you be able, because Lansing represents, like, Mr. Snyder said, represents Lansing, looks like Washington. It's a mess. Everybody's dug in. Would you be able to work on the other side of the aisle for the good of the district that you would represent?
Absolutely. I've been open about this from the beginning. I have been a Republican for a good chunk of my life. I was raised in a very conservative area by a very conservative family. And that's just how you were when you were being raised. Mm-hmm. So I understand what it is to be a Republican. And for me, I had my own break with them about 6.5, 7 years ago, when for me, it was when the U.S. Senate refused to even hold a hearing on Merrick Garland's nomination, because for me, that was this just rebuke of everything that Republicans were supposed to stand for, that if you're this constitutional conservative, the Constitution doesn't say anything about playing politics with the Supreme Court like that.
Correct.
So over the last several, and it wasn't immediately that I became a Democrat, but then I became very supportive of Governor Whitmer, incredibly supportive of now Secretary of Transportation Buttigieg's campaign. And I've really come into my own in that way. But when it comes to working with the other side, I think what it comes down to is how we frame issues and how we're addressing certain issues. One of my core tenets that I've run on since I started my campaign is pharmacists prescribe birth control. It's the idea that pharmacists receive an additional 20-hour training course. An individual seeking birth control would then come into a pharmacy, fill out a medical questionnaire, meet with the pharmacist. But the pharmacists themselves could directly prescribe birth control to women instead of having to go to a doctor or having a cooperative practice agreement. Because in states that have this, Oregon, for example, 10% of all birth control the following year after they implemented it came from pharmacists. 63% of all birth control prescribed by a pharmacist came to an individual who did not have a prescription the month before, which is showing just how much access for birth control, enabling more pharmacists because they're seemingly on every many corners, would bring to communities. Now, I use this as an example of how to find the middle and how to reframe the example, because while most Republicans and Democrats will never meet in the middle on their views on abortion, the tangible benefits of pharmacist prescribed birth control are increased graduation rates, lower costs associated, medical costs associated with births. You see massive drops in abortion in states that have implemented this because now more women have access to protection. And so if I were to be working with a Republican to try and get this legislation passed, so even though it seems very Democratic in nature, if a pro-life Republican truly wanted to see less abortion, I think that's how you try to find this middle ground that, look, if we implement this pharmacist prescribed birth control, if we increase access for women this way, you will still meet your end goal of seeing less abortion. That while that's not my motivation for it, is this way of finding this really complicated issue and bringing people together in the middle. And, you know, I think that's true with so many issues. I feel strongly that the real work gets done in the middle, and that, yeah, there's oftentimes the loudest voices are on both sides, but the real work gets done in the middle, and it's finding that common ground. It's finding ways in an otherwise issue that might be a polarized issue and finding where we can find compromise, where we can move forward for the betterment of the state.
Now, going to state, what are like your top five things that you would like to accomplish or see done?
Absolutely. And I'll just throw a plug. If you go to my website, BrennanGorman.com, I've put together actually 30 minutes worth of policy videos, because my whole campaign is predicated on community-driven, policy-focused. If at any time you're catching me trying to just give you some political platitude answer just to placate you, that was a lot of peas.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Cut me off, because that is not what I want to do. That's not what I'm about. And so in these videos, I get real specific. I talk about why something's an issue and how we should address it with policy. And so I guess my top two, and then I'll go to my other three, but my top two are non-monetary bail for low-risk offenders, because 60% of all individuals in a city or county jail in the state of Michigan right now are only there because they're too poor to afford bail. 53% of Americans cannot afford a financial emergency of $500 or more. 56% of Americans don't have more than $5,000 in their bank account right now. So it's no wonder that for people who are offenders, who are arrested and have nothing, that they get stuck in jail. But what that means for communities is that people are losing their families, their homes, their jobs, because they're stuck in jail and they're too poor to get out. So we're digging, if they're already at the bottom of the hole, they're somehow digging deeper. And this is the start of our criminal justice system. And so I think if we work on non-monetary bail, so for low risk, not medium risk or high risk, in the way that multiple states do it, even Oakland County, is they put together an inventory, a score sheet that says, do you have a job? Do you have family? What are you charged with? Do you have offenses? Have you absconded before? And if you're determined to be a low risk offender, then you can be let out on your own recognizance without bail. If you're medium risk, you would still have monetary bail, because the purpose of monetary bail is to make sure the offender comes to jail or comes back to court to make sure that they face trial. And if you're a high risk, you could still not be granted bail. I'm just saying we need this third tangible option. My second highest priority is equity in K through 12 education. Mm-hmm. So last year we received for the first time equal funding from the state. Every school district received the same amount of money per pupil from the state of Michigan. But that's not enough, because in urban and rural school districts, the property values are lower. And when property values and state funding are the only two ways that schools get funded, affluent suburban areas will always receive more money than urban or rural school districts. Because you go up to Scottville, you're in the city of Muskegon, the property values are lower, which means that you'll need 5 mills in the city of Muskegon for 1 mill in the city of Ann Arbor. So where we would have to be asking more of our residents who already don't have as much to try and just compete with a more affluent suburban neighborhood. And the compromise, I think, in the middle is a study done by the School Research Finance Collaborative that said that because not every student is the same, there are three unique barriers that need additional funding from the state of Michigan. So if a student meets one, two, or three of those needs, we need to provide funding to those districts additionally beyond that per pupil. And it's students experiencing poverty, a disability, or who English is a second language.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put that into context, there might be maybe 5% of students in the city of Ann Arbor facing poverty. But you look at the city of Muskegon, 85% of students in Muskegon public schools are facing poverty. It's 93% in the city of Muskegon Heights. Even in North Muskegon, it's 24%, which means that each of these districts uniquely will be able to benefit because it'll help make up that gap, because most students who would be experiencing poverty will tend to live in areas with lower property values,
mm-hmm.
Because that correlation between income and property values is usually very, very close. And so equity in K through 12 education is how long-term we'll be able to maintain better infrastructure, be competitive with teacher salaries. And most importantly for me, you know, before the recession, there was teachers and there was a lot of support staff in schools, and support staff would help meet these unique barriers or help students who needed additional help. Mm-hmm. But after the recession, support staff was the first one to be let go and were never hired back. And instead we added more job responsibilities for teachers. And so while teachers now have to do more without getting more pay, I think we should go back to how it was, in that you have support staff there to help your teachers so that the teachers can ultimately get back there and teach.
Definitely. I think
this is the funding mechanism for how we get there. Mm-hmm. I'll just quick hit three of my other top priorities. It's pharmacy prescribed birth control. It's increased access in infrastructure, as well as, we need to codify LGBTQIA2S+ rights in statute. Right now, all of those rights are by court rulings only. Pretty much any protection that you have for sexual orientation or gender identity are mm-hmm. purely there because a court in Michigan or federally said, you know what, this right should exist. But as we've seen with Roe v. Wade, not every right is enshrined, or every right is now up in the air, especially when Justice Thomas's concurrence said, you know what, these are the ones we should be looking after, one of them being Obergefell for same-sex marriage. I mean, mm-hmm. Michigan still has a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. So if the Supreme Court ever got rid of that ruling, much like our snapback statute for abortion, we would immediately snap back and have a prohibition against same-sex marriage. While it might seem administrative, these are incredibly important to make sure that these 400,000 individuals in the state of Michigan are protected, because, you know, and I say court rulings, but there haven't been court rulings for everything. There's still not protections in banking and finance for lending purposes. There's other protections that need to be enshrined that currently aren't there because there hasn't been a court case to give that community those rights.
Mr. Gorman, I think in all my years of interviewing people, the first two things that you said with the criminal justice system, no one has ever said that. No one. I applaud to you that on that, because no one has ever said that it was a problem. And two, trying to explain to people that our kids, that we are in an international, our kids compared to other kids. And I was just looking at the ranking of Muskegon Public Schools as far as housing, and it was like a 2. But our kids in general in the United States to compete with other kids in other countries, we're dismal because of the very things that you said. But people don't understand that we have to compete internationally. We have to invest in our local schools equally, if not more, in some areas.
Well, because in an inadequate education, if we are not meeting the needs of our students, it creates a cycle. It creates a cycle of poverty. It creates a cycle of people not caring about their community, because ultimately education is the silver bullet. You know, if we want to bridge the gap between just people emotionally, it's through education. If you want to increase literacy, it's through education. There is not a single thing that won't be improved if we double down on education. And, you know, one of the big things I talk about, because I talk with everyone, Republican, Democrat, my goal really is to build bridges between people. And I get so often, you know, I'm socially liberal, but, you know, I'm fiscally conservative. And I push back on that fiscally conservative, because if we could throw $5 billion at public education in the state of Michigan, we reached 99% literacy. We reached a population that is the best educated in the country. Why would we not make that investment? Why would we not make that investment in our kids, in our future? And it creates a lot of very interesting conversations, because it makes a point that, yes, nobody wants to spend money that, you know, is going towards something that ultimately we shouldn't be spending money on. I get it. We want to be responsible with our money. But I think that's what it comes down to. They want to be fiscally responsible, not that they're conservative, because education being this sterling example of, if we put money toward it, we make sure that every kid is taken care of, we will see massive benefits in every community in our state.
What do you say to people that you just said that, you know, you're liberal in some areas and you're like conservative in other areas? I think that's healthy. I think to be just one-sided, just totally blue or totally red in ideology, without doing some thinking. What do you think the people out there think about your approach on that?
I mean, it's difficult to say, because this is a primary, and, you know, I'm kind of bucking what I should be. I should be giving political platitudes. I should be reading the Democratic platform in a primary. But at the end of the day, I want to be true to myself. I want to be true to the policies that I've been passionate about for years. I want to be true to, you know, who I've been, who I am today, and ultimately why I think that's a benefit. You know, I know that in this election, there is nobody better qualified. I'm the most educated. What I do for a living, I'm a liquor attorney. I'm an administrative attorney. I work out of a document called the Liquor Control Code that's 550 pages long. I live in statute every day. This what would be mind-numbing to other people is what gives me passion. And I think when we look at what we're looking for next out of a state representative in this position, we need a leader. We don't need somebody who's just kind of going along with what people expect somebody in this role to say. And, you know, I know I've ruffled some feathers, I guess, in town by saying things like this, but it's true. We need somebody to say, you know what, I get that we're on this trajectory right now, but, you know, what if we tried something different? What if we wanted to try to advocate for something more? What if we asked for more and demanded more from our legislature? And I think that I'm the candidate best suited for that in this election.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to commend you guys, because running for office is one of those things that people don't understand. It's hard. It's tough, especially in this environment where people are so dug in. I want to commend you guys for wanting to serve, and hopefully our viewers and the people that are listening will feel the same way. At the end of the day, what is the thing that makes you tick when it comes down to the possibility of serving people?
I think it comes down for me to a crippling level of empathy. For me, I get overwhelmed by the number of issues that are facing our community, our state, our country. And, you know, for me, government is this unique place. Government is this one place where everything comes together. There might be 200 societal issues, and I could spend my life, all my time, my money devoted to one issue, but not make a dent. In government, when you asked if I have, what are my top five platforms, I can address all five of those in this position, because in government, there's certain problems that the government's the cause of that only can be fixed within. There's some problems that only the government can fix. And there's some problems that the government can lay lasting generational change for. And I want to lend my voice, my vision, my experience to be able to be this next leader in Muskegon, to try and take Muskegon and our state forward.
Okay, Mr. Gorman, if anybody wants to donate or find out more about you, how do they do it?
www.brennangorman.com. That's Brennan with B-R-E-N-N-E-N. Again, I have 30 minutes worth of policy videos. I know I just gave a couple quick hits, but I really do go into a pretty good amount of depth into many of the top seven policies that I have and I'm really running on in this election because, again, for me, policy first. We can't just say, you know what, we need better roads. We need better jobs. We need to say, this is what we're going to do to get better jobs. This is what we're going to do to have better roads. This is what we're going to do to fix our failing criminal justice system. And so check out my website, my Facebook page, if you want to see what I've been doing around in the community. I stay pretty active in the community, you know, regardless of whether I'm running for this, because that's, you know, that's how I met my wife. That's what brought my wife and I together. And that's still what we do because we just love being in our community.
Okay. Well, Brennan Gorman, good luck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
And you take care.
Have a great day.
All right, have a day. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Brennan Gorman. We're going to Charles Richard right now. How are you doing, sir? And I can't get it. Mr. Richard, there we go. We got your picture now.
Great. Just downtown is getting, obviously, just getting kind of.
Mr. Shire, if you're driving, can you pull over? Because what's happening is we can't hear you right now. So if you can get to one spot, then we can get you in. Okay. All right, we're gonna try to get him straightened up. And get his sound. Let's go back. See if we can get him. Mr. Richard, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah, I'm on the side of the road. I've always been here, Greg, sitting on the side of the road. I'm downtown Muskegon.
Okay. Tell us something about yourself and what you're running for.
All right. Yeah, my name is Chuck Richard, or Charles, if you really want former. I've been involved in the city of Muskegon as well as the city of North Shores. I was on both city councils before we moved up to Hart, Michigan. I'm running for the 32nd District Senate. I've been married 42 years, but I've lived 59 years in Muskegon County. I only moved out 9 years ago because we had a cottage up on Crystal Lake up there in Hart, and that's where we moved to. So. But I'm involved. My wife is a nurse practitioner here in Muskegon. And so we still have a lot of friends, family here. But the district runs all the way from almost Traverse City all the way down to Muskegon. I'm a former aerospace guy. I was vice president of aerospace on the F-35. And to give a little background of that. And I've also worked for Howmet, obviously, there and ran a metallurgical lab. So a lot of experience, both in government and the business side, and a business owner as well.
Now, you're running against who?
John Bumstead.
Okay, John Bumstead. So you're running against the Republican, on the Republican side.
Absolutely right. Correct.
Okay. Why? So what we try to do is try to make these questions equal for everyone, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, so tell us, what are the five things that you would like to accomplish and in your seat?
Well, Well, first of all, you get my background. My background is also I was involved in on this election, very heavily involved. I actually was part of the Supreme Court case that went to the federal Supreme Court, one of the six that the Kraken. Because why? Because we knew that there was elections issues. There's even one in Muskegon, if you really want to know. So one of the first things you're going to look at is, of course, the forensic side of it. Whether we agree there is a fraud or not is irrelevant. But what we do know as statisticians and engineers and scientists is that something occurred. We need to know what that something is to fix it before we go on. And people say it doesn't matter. It does matter because it affects every aspect of our life. So number one, forensic audit. Number two, bring our state representatives and state senators back into the district. It does no good, does us no good to have them off in Lansing. They don't know what our needs are. They have no way of knowing. They come home on the weekends. That's not enough. We need to feel the pain, so to speak. And that means being interfacing with you, with me, and everybody across this district. And we can keep an eye on it. There's a general distrust of government. So until we get there, we're going to need to bring them back into the district. Establish goals, Greg. I mean, on the business side, we have what we call KPIs, key performance measures. Just like school, a school kid, you got to have grades. We should be graded every year by our constituents in terms of how we are performing. But to do that, you got to have a measure. You got to have a scorecard. What is that, right? What are you going to be graded on? Those are called goals and objectives. We need to do that. In other words, what's the present state? What's the future state? And here's the roadmap how to get there. And I think that's really important. We talk about gas tax funds. We're about road funds. The problem is our gas tax is not being used correctly. Right now it's being used to subsidize teachers' pensions. That's okay. Teachers deserve their pensions. But use it another way. Get their money to where it is. But put our road money, because we pay that tax, and make it or apply it to roads. The last one is, make it real, a budget. Right now, the current budget coming up is October 1st. $40 million going to a bike path. When we have people that can't eat, we have people that can't buy medicine, and we have people who can't buy gas. Let me tell you on the medicine side, my wife is a medical professional, which you know. It's a very sad commentary, that fact that we have people that just aren't getting the proper medical care, and that is because of our priorities. We have to have them. Our guys don't have goals and objectives. Well, if they don't have goals and objectives, how do they ever meet it? Brandon just talked a little bit about that, and I have to agree with some of the stuff he said. There's some things we disagree, but that's okay. But there's some things we agree is that, you know, government has to be responsible, and they're not being responsible. Oh, sure, they might be doing a job or it looks like it, but let's be honest. They're not serving our needs. How can they? They don't know what they are.
With people being so dug in, would you be able to work on the other side of the aisle?
I grew up as a Democrat, Greg. Let me tell you that. My father today would probably be in the middle of a John Kennedy type guy. We got to say, you know, when John Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do, but what you can do for your country, that was a profound statement. That was a profound statement because it's touched our hearts. This is about heart. And if you can talk about heart and about Bible, you know doggone well where that goes. Do you know the King James Bible? Heart is mentioned 800, I think it's 26 times. There's a reason for that. We're talking about heart and passion, about passion for people. That means not being a Republican, not being a Democrat, but looking at the issues as they are. And I must say this. I used to do a talk show on one of the other stations, right? Firing line. And in that, you would swear sometimes I'm a Democrat, sometimes a Republican. Because you know what? People are people, Greg. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican, Democrat, black, white, whatever. It doesn't matter. The issues are the issues. The Constitution doesn't make that distinction. It lays it out and it lays our rights out. And that's what we have to make sure people are getting, that we are adhering to their rights.
Mr. Starks, so far, I agree with a lot that you're saying. The problem is that on this show is that we try to get one side, we try to get everybody on this show. Right. And let's face it, we have been neglected by the Republican side of just trying to find out their side of the show. What do you say about that?
Well, I can't speak for the others. If you know anything about me, which you know, I do a podcast You ever hear of logic and reason, the truth in black and white? Mm-hmm. We do a podcast because that logic is Ryan Roberts, and I'm reason, biblical, right? R-E-Z-I-N. And the reason mm-hmm. is because we're reaching out to people. We, both of us, are activists. Let's face it. We're activists for our communities. Our community is people. And so to do that, we have to reach out. We don't care. We don't really care. Right now, do you think I'm reaching out only to Republicans? Heavens no. Heavens no. We have to reach out to people. We have to reach out to the fact that their rights are being violated. That's our biggest objective right now is get government back to working for us. That's why you heard me say, bring it back to the district. I can't tell you why those Republicans there, why they won't. There are some I just won't, I won't comment on. I should say I won't comment. I don't know the reasons, to be honest with you, but I got to tell you this. I'm the number one nemesis of the MIGOP. The Michigan GOP hates me. Why? Because I bring truth. And let me give you explain that a little more. With truth, you get trust. With mm-hmm. trust, you get relationships. And with the relationships, you get communities. With communities, you get states, you get nations, a solid nation. That's why truth has to be. I'm a purveyor of truth. And I got to tell you, there will be people, even this county, Republicans, that don't like what I say. And the reason is because I call them out on the carpet.
Charles, we're running out of time. We got to get you back. How can somebody find out more about your agenda?
Yeah, go on Richard for Senate. That's R-I-T-C-H-A-R-D, the number 4, capital S-E-N-A-T-E.com. You'll get everything about it. And if not, I'll give you the number, Greg. If they call in the radio station, have them call me.
Okay. Charles Richard, thank you so much. We're running out of time for the show. You take care, and God bless.
God bless you, Greg. Hey, thanks for coaching with Gip.
Thank you.
He's a friend. You can check on me through him.
Yes, I will. Take care. All right. Listen, we've had so many candidates, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, be an educated voter. Let me say that again. Be an educated voter. Go out there. Do the research. Find out what these people are talking about. We're going to continue to bring every individual on this show. But I'm going to say this. We ain't going to beg them, because here's the thing. If you won't come to us now, you won't come to us later. So everybody has a chance to come on the show to have equal time. And that's what we're going to do. Listen, we're out of time. This is Torn in Two. Listen, go out, sow a seed into somebody's life. Bless someone. Take care, and God bless.